What's up, gang? I'm Cameron Caskey.
I'm Tim Miller.
And this is FY Pod. We are the woke liberal alphas you've been waiting for, here to deliver cutting edge, piping hot takes on the news and Gen Z and other bullshit. Every week, we're going to top it off with in-depth conversations with some of today's top renegade thinkers and contemporary intellectuals. Now, many people are asking, what the hell is going on with Gen Z? And we're here to give you the simple answer. Don't worry, folks. Me and Tim are taking care of it. We're cleaning house. And we are the rogue dark horses who are going to take out the intellectual trash. And we're going to fix Gen Z like a busted engine on a tractor through the power of fearless conversation. And who knows? Maybe we'll make a friend or two along the way. We, Tim Miller and Cameron Caskey, are the real liberals. It's you rotten kids who are the problem. That's my intro.
Cameron, That seems like a bigger goal than I had for this pod. We might be a little misaligned here on episode one. You know, I'm here to like do earnest things, like learn from the youth and understand their ways.
What about that wasn't earnest?
Well, I mean, I just don't think that I wasn't planning on ramming a truck through Gen Z to shake them up and, you know, and tell them a thing or two. That wasn't real. This was more of kind of an anthropological podcast for me, but we could also have a mission statement too. It's just, maybe we might have to develop it along the way. I don't know.
Dream big. Okay. So what are we talking about this week?
Well, we've got your pal Dylan Geit coming on in segment two. We'll talk about that. Always in segment three, we'll get into Gen Z news. But first, I kind of wanted to pick your brain on like what your pals, you know, what the people in your feeds are thinking about the first month of Trump. It's hard for me as somebody riddled with TDS who's has to do a daily podcast and watch the news every day to kind of get a good sense for what's, you know, trickling down to the masses. And I'm curious what you think has, you know, has landed, has either offended or beguiled or inspired the young people who are paying or not paying attention to the first month of this aspiring autocracy.
There was this poll recently. I don't remember which reputable news organization it was, but it was one of them that said that Trump's approval rating with Gen Z has actually plummeted recently, almost a sort of buyer's remorse. And it brings to mind how, you know, I've had conversations with a lot of young people who have said, listen, a lot of the TDS, you know, Trump derangement syndrome, older libs are talking about, Trump's Hitler. He's going to be Hitler. And a lot of young people said, okay, that's dramatic. You're all isolating us by saying this. And you're freaking out about this funny guy who's totally like a con man. But he's a con man who knows how to win. And if he's fighting for us, that means we're going to win. And you got to cut it out with this Trump is Hitler stuff. And then Trump comes out to us and he says, listen, I'm actually going to do everything I possibly can to be Hitler.
Or maybe Napoleon.
He's too tall for that. At first, I was going to say Trump is going to do everything he can within the law to be Hitler. And then he said, no, we're not going to do the law. We're going to do Hitler, so much so that he had this foreign billionaire go up and do not one, but two Sig Heils right off the bat. That was how we introduced this.
So you think the Sig Heil broke through? You think people, because I don't know, man, I think that, you know, I could see a world where your jaded peers like might have thought that was based or thought that the earnest West Wing liberals were getting too excitable about
the Sig
Heil.
This isn't just a Gen Z thing. I think across the board, a lot of people really only get upset about anti-Semitism when it's coming from the left. So, for example, if somebody like AOC did two Sig Heils in a row, I think the ADL would have said, this is a blitzkrieg. They wouldn't have said, hey, everybody, it was an awkward gesture. And then after the ADL defended Elon went on and made a bunch of Nazi jokes as if Nazism is a fucking joke. And the ADL had to be like, wait, no, actually, this was bad. And I'm like, oh, my God, guys, anti-Semitism comes from people on the left and the right. Anti-Semitism is one of the most popular things in the entire world. And yet I feel like when you are on the right, you almost get a free pass. Like, the amount of money that was spent to fight anti-Semitism on the left this year, meanwhile, it is doing just as well on the right. People on the right love anti-Semitism. But no, we're not going to sound the alarms about that. And that just goes to show that there's this different standard to which conservatives are held across the board right now, where a lot of the things that if a liberal would do them, a lot of the rhetoric, messaging, they would rightfully get eaten alive. Conservatives do it. And because the bar is so low now, it's like, yep, that's what they do. That's conservatism. It's just foreign billionaires doing Sieg Heils. Don't worry about it. Don't be dramatic. Nazi stuff isn't Nazi stuff if it's a Republican.
Okay. This wasn't really on the show map when I asked you what you wanted to talk about, since, you know, this is the Gen Z show and you're in charge, but I'm just going to lean into the chaotic energy and we're just going to talk about anti-Semitism, because I saw something else I wanted your take on recently. This is my man, David Shore, who's kind of like a Democratic pollster type guru. And he posted this chart, and it was explicit anti-Semitism by age. This is not like we're trying to guess whether somebody is anti-Semitic based on, you know, whether they said for the river to the sea or whether they did two Sieg Heils at the inauguration. This is like asking people, do you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of the Jewish people? Like, pretty straightforward. Fave, unfave on Jews. And the chart, which we'll, for the YouTube people, put on screen here, is like the Trump people had the highest number, more than the left. So that says to your point. But the more alarming thing was, like, among 20-year-olds, it was like above 25% overall. And then the chart kind of goes, and like among like 70-year-olds, like there are no 70-year-olds who are like, I hate Jews. Or like there's like one, you know, 5%, like just of like explicit Nazis.
Truly one of those situations where you can say, okay, boomer, and you really mean it. Boomers? That's A-okay. Thank you, gang. I appreciate you looking
thumbs
out for
up,
my,
boomers.
For my people.
What do you think about that? What's happening? Why is that? That 20-year-olds are so like fucking cool with just being like Jews, unfavorable, thumbs down, bagels, not into it.
I think that there's a couple things going on. I think that anti-Semites and right-wing pro-Israel people have kind of teamed up with this messaging that every single thing that Benjamin Netanyahu does is the actions of the Jewish people as a whole, right? You know, there's one thing anti-Semites and right-wing pro-Israel people agree on, and that's this foreign country and their army and this entire ethno-religion are intrinsically tied together. They're the same exact thing. So I think a lot of young people see that messaging that white supremacists and right-wing pro-Israel people agree on and both push, and they say, oh, so this foreign government's army and this religion are the same thing. And the other thing is fascism and alt-right ideology, as we've discussed, is really blooming with Gen Z. And a lot of young people are seeing this whole fascism thing and saying, wait a second, Let's dip our toes in this pool and then let's dive in fucking head first. So it's one of those situations where you're like, yeah, this is one of those things the far left and the far right can agree on is fuck the Jews. And as a Jewish person, I'm sitting here like, okay, can we take a look at this ethno-religion and say, historically, people seem to be trying to kill us in pretty much every chapter of history. All the way back. Everybody just wants to fucking kill us. Meanwhile, we gave you motherfuckers Seinfeld. We gave you Curb. A Jewish man scored the first 2 points in the NBA. We're contributing all of these positive things. It's not my truth, but.
You don't like locks?
I don't like locks, and I'm sorry to my community from the Boca Raton, Florida. Wow. Upbringing of mine and my former temple, B'nai Israel on Glades Road, but I'm not a Lox guy. But all this is to say, I think that you've got right-wing ideology really slaying with Gen Z, and you've got people on the far left falling for this white supremacist narrative that this country and this country's military's actions and this entire small group of people are the same thing, and therefore to hate one is to hate the other. And here we are. Anti-Semitism is so powerful, and it's really worse than it's been in a very long time, and it's very upsetting to me.
We might need to find, I don't know, we might need to find somebody who's a little bit more anti-Semite curious in Gen Z to bring them on for one of our future guests to try to get a little bit better understanding. I think that's as good a theory that you're offering as any, but it's still a pretty dramatic jump there from 0 to 5% to 1 in 4. 1 in 4 Gen Z's being like, yeah, I don't know. The Jews, that's a thumbs down. We have a couple other news items I want your take on. Do you want to do Andrew Tate or Trump's propaganda victory at NASCAR? Which one of those do you think is more ripe for discussion?
I mean, they're so similar, right? Let's talk about Trump's propaganda victory at NASCAR, because, you know, the best way to reach the Trump audience is to go vroom, vroom, cars go fast. Hell yeah, that's America, baby. Tara Settmeyer, if that's how you pronounce it, a former Republican communications director on Capitol Hill, said, propaganda is why Donald Trump is president again, and they know this, which is why they undermined the press, expertise, and science. We're going to get rid of expertise, we're going to get rid of intelligent people, and we're going to make cars go fast, and we're going to distract everybody by doing shit like calling the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America and boldly, flagrantly throwing that around while also making the cars go vroom.
Okay, so maybe this is why I'm a moderate squish, you know, establishment shill that everybody hates these days, but like, I don't know. Couldn't we find a middle ground there? Couldn't we have science and cars go vroom? I feel like that might be a winner for Dems to do, to rather than making fun of Trump driving on the NASCAR, whatever. I'm not a fucking NASCAR person. I fucking hate NASCAR. Actually, I went to one NASCAR event. It was like the worst day of my life. It's like very loud.
You want to find
you
a bunch of people.
See what's happening.
You want to find a bunch of people who hate Jews. Go to a NASCAR event.
So it's like I went to one in Martinsville. It was not great. It was not a fun day. It's not for me culturally. That said, even me, a NASCAR hater, I looked at the video of the beast driving around with the flags on the track, and I was like, that's pretty fucking cool. That's cool.
So why can't
Dems do cool things and vaccines? Can't we vaccinate people and do cool shit?
Listen, Trump is an authoritarian fascist. He signed 64 executive orders and 27 memos and proclamations in less than 1 month, doing everything that far-right authoritarian monsters did. And I saw that car on that racetrack, and I said, hell yeah, that's my fucking country right there. But the thing is, it's like, it's part of the larger propaganda war that Republicans win in general, because if you remember, Biden did the cool cars thing too. Like, there was a period of time
when he was like awake, like in the early Biden.
Yeah,
during the VP time.
Pre-Sleepy Joe, more like, you know, more like one yawn a day Joe.
Yeah, but Trans Am Biden was cool.
It's like there's nothing badass when Democrats try to be badass, because Democrats are so Ivy League fancy Nancy with their communication that when they're trying to be cool, it's like when the teacher tries to be cool and the whole class is like, okay, relax. And you know, that's partially because Republicans rely on uneducated people. Uneducated people keep their machine going, whereas Democrats are trying to market to, you know, Ivy League types, even though they're also simultaneously trying to deport Columbia students, so they better figure out that relationship. But I think Democrats do need to figure out how to get some swagger back, and I think, you know, you and I both like Beto O'Rourke. I think he even needs to lean into the swagger. I think because he has the opportunity to look cool. Like, his hair looks like shit. He's normally... his shirt normally has one more button down than your average. And he can get down and dirty and be legit, but the Democratic Party forces you to be a certain type of fancy Nancy that takes away from that. And the Democratic Party rewards not being cool. So, if Biden did that type of thing at the NASCAR race, every one of the wokesters that I hang out with would have been like, this is so bad for climate change. Why are you supporting cars? And it's like, so it's the establishment on the one hand telling everybody that they have to be this hoity-toity prick. And then you've got the wokesters, who I identify as one of them, by the way, say that would see that and go, oh my God, Biden is a climate criminal. We need to throw blood at him at some sort of PETA style protest. And it's like, here's your party eating each other alive. And both of you are acting like it's the other side that's doing it. The people farther to the left are saying the moderates are tripping us in every direction and stopping everything we can do to move forward. And then you've got the moderates being like, oh, these woke progressives are ruining everything. Meanwhile, on the right, the MAGA freaks and the quote unquote principled conservatives are holding hands and teaming up, and that's why they're winning. So here we are in a Democratic Party where everybody's trying to trip each other up, and that robs us of things like Biden going on NASCAR and making a car go vroom.
I can't just make cars go vroom. It seems like a winner. So the Andrew Tate news, if you want to call it that, is the Trump administration has called their Romanian counterparts and pressured them. I don't know what kind of leverage we have over the Romanians these days, but apparently we think we have some. Pressured them to lift the travel restrictions over Andrew Tate. Andrew Tate was charged with human trafficking, sexual misconduct, money laundering.
That his fans are accusing the Jews of doing, by the way, all the alt-right anti-Semite freaks who love Andrew Tate. He's literally doing the stuff that they say that we do. Do you know about the anti-Semitic conspiracies about my family?
I don't. Please share.
When I was doing my Parkland school shooting activism, you're all welcome, by the way. When I was being so brave and inspiring as one of those brave and inspiring Parkland teens.
You were so brave. Can we just stop for a second just to talk about how brave you are and inspiring?
No, I think everybody ought to just pause to take a moment of silence for me specifically. But when I was doing that, a bunch of the alt-right people on 4chan found out that my father and my grandfather were adoption lawyers. And them being Jews and doing something where a baby is moving from one place to another, they were like human trafficking. And it didn't help that my grandfather did an adoption for Chief Justice John Roberts. Which RIP Robert Caskey, he slayed with that. That made them even more upset. But in terms of the Andrew Tate thing,
cool. I did not know John Roberts had an adopted child. That's cool. We do rep adoption here at the Bulwark.
I come from an adoption family. I love adoption. But the Romanian thing, first of all, I don't know shit about Romania other than vampires. And Andrew Tate, same. I would not be surprised if I found out that he was preying on lustful, innocent young women and sucking their blood, which brings to mind the new Nosferatu film, which you all ought to catch because it was terrific. But with Andrew Tate, he is so attractive to men my age because men my age, by social media, by COVID, by the culture wars that are being so terribly lost by folks who share my values, they've been so attracted to Andrew Tate because none of us except for me are getting laid, and people like Andrew Tate come up to us.
Andrew Tate's getting laid, I guess, is sleeping with a lot of women, sometimes allegedly against their will, I guess.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know if I want to call that getting laid. I think that's just literally sex trafficking. But Andrew Tate tells us what we want to hear, which is it's not your fault. It's society's fault. It's women's fault. And women need to be put in their place. Women need you to boss them around. And unfortunately, men are very receptive to this. It's what we want to hear. And a lot of women uphold misogyny too, because, misogyny wouldn't be killing it the way it is without the help of many women who support it, including the women who voted for Donald Trump, who flagrantly bragged about making non-consensual advances on women and exploiting them and using his celebrity to get it. So Tate and Trump are really birds of a feather. And that's why Trump is looking out for him and trying to... There's this thing that's widely known. It's like when you see frat bros covering up other frat bros who are drugging people, sexual predators tend to look out for other sexual predators, you know.
It's kind of like a real hypnol caucus type thing.
Yeah, and it's this thing in Trump world in general where, like, if you're one type of crook, you're going to look out for another type of crook. So, like, Eric Adams. Eric Adams has become Mr. Trump V2 because he knows that Trump's going to look out for him if he panders to Trump. And then, you know, that brings to mind, why isn't Kathy Hochul removing Eric Adams? And, you know, my best guess is Trump's strongman politics are sort of telling Hochul, if you fuck with Adams, I will go in and fuck with the state of New York as hard as I possibly can. And that includes breaking the law. So crooks are looking out for crooks. Trump is looking out for Netanyahu. Like, all of these guys, they're from the same ilk, which is the individuals who have power over other individuals and use it to harm and exploit others. And that is why extremely woke alpha chads like you and me need to be podcasting.
That's true. It's an important part of the resistance. What I do wonder, like, you actually have female friends, which is important. That's something that we're going to be discussing further in our next segment with
and we're going to have,
you know,
some
with
of
guys,
on.
Gen Z guys who, like, you know, discussing how they don't necessarily like befriend women anymore. But so since you do, like, the Tate thing has to like have some backfire effect as well, right? Like, I mean, the gender gap is already so wide, but there's got to be like, I mean. Are the people that like Andrew Tate really, like, cool? Like, I can't imagine that.
Here's the problem. I see a lot of young men send Andrew Tate videos around, including to me, but with this idea that, no. It's just because it's funny how crazy it is. And that's kind of, you know, that it's not the same as Trump on SNL in 2015, but it's the same idea of Trojan horsing something in by it being the meme. So quickly, it being funny to laugh at, oh, of course you saying that women are asking to be sexually assaulted. That's crazy. But it's kind of funny, right? That type of thing is how these dangerous, evil, fascist ideologies go through. Because as soon as you're making light of it, you're normalizing it. And I'm part of this problem too. Because I'll text certain friends of mine a video of Trump and be like, gee, isn't this funny? And I personally believe there's a balance that can be struck between recognizing and calling out fascist authoritarian behavior and also being like, Trump taking over the Kennedy Center, as terrible as it is, especially since one of the first things fascists do is go in and attack the arts and restrict people's right to express themselves. But the wording of the announcement I kind of thought was funny, so I need to hold myself accountable for that, because again, indulging in those types of things and being like, no, I'm just looking at this as a joke is all well and good until these same young men who are sending around the Andrew Tate videos as a meme are normalizing it. And then suddenly, wait a second, maybe this guy might have a point. And Joe Rogan sold a show for like $100 million to Spotify because of that.
The Trojan horse point is so good. I want to do more on that, but we should get to our other guest. It's a guy named Dylan Geich. He's a digital activist. He served in the Army. He was a college wrestler who made some news for coming out as gay then. Now he's like kind of bi. Everybody's bi. I think pretty much all of our guests are going to be bi. We're going to have to figure that out. He's got a book of poetry, Early Works, a collection of poetry. Tell us about Dylan and who else and the other kind of vaping bisexuals you have planned for the show going forward.
Don't know if I've ever seen Dylan vape, but he probably has. He gives vape. I met Dylan at a rooftop party in Brooklyn when we were both Columbia students. I brought my cousin who was pretty perplexed by Dylan's scene, because Dylan's a really cool guy and he hangs out with really cool people. Dylan is, as you described him once, a warrior monk, right? He's fought for this country. He's put his fucking boots on the ground. And he has some very, very complex, controversial, and radical political takes. But it's interesting because this is someone who grew up in a sort of moderate right community and area and held those types of views, and the views changed in college. And now he is radicalized in a very interesting direction. And his is an interesting perspective to hear. He's a hot Instagram guy. I met him through my circles of influencers, many of whom are twinks. Dylan's a twunk. Twunk, for those of you who are not privy to this, is a twink, which is like a skinny, cute gay boy mixed with hunk. So it's like a ripped, cute gay guy. Yeah. And I also
and not are all of the guests that you're going to bring going to be twunks? Or are we going to more of a diverse range of body types?
I'm not going to spoil our second guest, but okay. Our second guest is about as big of a twink as you'll ever find.
Okay.
And then after that, we have this great activist who is a reproductive rights organizer. She has done some great work on the ground. And then we're having a former Barstool journalist who is also my ex-girlfriend. So we'll do well, that'll be it. That'll be
I'm
a hoot.
So excited to meet all of these
to meet some
24-year-old micro celebrities. It's going to be great. They're going to have wonderful, hopefully they're going to enlighten me. I guess maybe we can achieve both of our goals. If I get enlightened first and I do some learning over the first few months, then after that, we can then influence, right? It's education followed by influence. Maybe that's a good goal for the pod.
Listen, there are many very smart people. I'm not saying I'm one of them, but there are many highly intelligent people who will argue, possibly in court, that I am the wokest white man in Gen Z maybe ever.
Okay.
And my goal for this podcast is for every white man who listens to it, if possible, I don't know if it's possible, to be even woker than I. So we'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. Up next, Dylan Guyke. Stick around. All right, we're back. I got Cam, and we've got Dylan Guyke. Dylan, I learned 2 seconds ago, has 546,000 Instagram followers. Unclear to me why. So I was hoping you'd give us a little background on you and, like, you know, why you got so many fans and what you've been up to.
Yeah, I mean, so I kind of grew up. I'm like a 98 baby, right? So I'm kind of in the middle of the two generations, actually. And getting ready for this, I talked to a lot of my older friends, and it's weird. Like, I'm at a generational gap point where, like, my older friends are giving me different answers than my younger friends. But I think we all kind of grew up, like, with the wild, wild west internet. And I definitely grew up at a time where, like, influencers were just becoming a thing. It was kind of MySpace and then Vine era. And then I was, like, 16, 18 when Vine died, and it was all moving over to, like, vlogging on YouTube. And my brother moved out to LA when I was 18 with a guy named David Dobrik, who was, like, a big vlogger. And I sort of got into that scene and developed a bunch of fans online. And I've been kind of stepped back the last few years, a little retired from the internet scene. Yeah, but I still kind of keep an eye on it. Most of my friends work in the industry, so.
What kind of content were you putting out? Was this like?
I would live stream. I would, like, this is like early days of Fortnite had just come out. So I was, like, streaming video games, just chatting, streaming,
Chatting about what, though? Like philosophy or like
philosophy,
like
politics,
or like what? Politics,
drama, yeah. Whatever. Like, yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry. I feel like we're missing some very, very interesting lore on Dylan, including the things you have done outside the internet. Because while having a bunch of followers online is a cool, fun thing, I feel like the deepest cuts and coolest lore from you happened off screen.
Yeah, it's probably fair. Yeah, I'm not like a huge. I'm kind of like the anti-influencer, if you will. I kind of play like the big brother role to a lot of the like biggest influencers you probably have heard of. But yeah, I kind of stepped away from that whole industry. Like I said, I went back to school at Columbia, but then kind of became disillusioned with Columbia as well. Joined the military, served for about 18 months in the infantry and special operations communities. Then became very disillusioned with the American Empire, left that as well, and kind of just went on like a very spiritual, like self-find journey type beat. Last year I did a walk across the country for charity. Did like 1,000 miles on foot by myself, which was pretty cool. So I do like a lot of random stuff. I don't know.
People say so you're a veteran shaman influencer. Where do, who, sure. How do you get paid?
Yeah, I'm a writer. I think of myself as an artist. I make money in lots of different ways, but like all online platforms. Although over the summer, like I did a TV show. So like kind of traditional entertainment.
Are you allowed to tell us what show?
I probably can't.
Was it scripted?
It's a big network show. Partially, I mean, no, it's unscripted, but it's not.
Was it one of those shows?
It's like the show where like you're like a prince and you go to a castle and like the girl like tries to pick from like 20 different princes. Is it
No. I've turned down most of those types of shows. This is a new show. It's not out yet, so there's not even a name I could give you technically, but. Point being, yeah, I do kind of traditional media stuff as well, and then I kind of like bounce around.
I'm going to let Cameron take over for in a second, though, but just like to kind of level set for people. So you said you went to the military, you've become disillusioned with the empire. Could you just like give us like your politics? Like, what are your politics?
So they've changed a lot. Like,
give us your trajectory.
In the last few years. But I mean, yeah, I think I grew up like your basic Midwest kind of right leaning white privileged, North Chicago suburbs kid, and then got more involved with politics, got to meet like a wider, more diverse array of like political opinions in Colombia as well, but then I didn't really have my own formed solid enough at that time to even interact with, a lot of those people. Like, I think the first time I met someone who told me they're an anarcho-communist, I was like, what are we talking about here? But now I'm probably like closer to that position. I'm very leftist.
You're closer to anarcho-communism now?
Yeah. Certainly than when I was in high school.
Okay. But were you in high school were you old enough to vote for Trump 1? Did you vote? You said you were kind of...
No. Actually, I don't... I'm a radical. So let's just be clear on that. And I will stand on that. So I know a lot of my positions here are going to be radical. But I don't actually partake in like the U.S. system at all. Or at least as little as I can. I don't want to vote. I don't want... Because that's like legitimizing the system that I don't think has any real authority over me. But,
okay. Yeah. So no vote. So you went from Midwestern white bread, kind of whatever, Mitt Romney, and to near an
anarcho-capitalism
in like 11 years.
Left. Yeah, I would say I still like lean left, but I think there's a huge right.
It's like Pete Buttigieg. You went from like Midwest white Pete Buttigieg to anarcho-capitalist over the course of the last three years.
Anarcho-capitalist is the opposite, right? Yeah. Got it. Anarcho-capitalist is what we're fighting against.
That's what like moderate Democrat and then otherwise Republican parents think is going to happen to their kid when they send them to an Ivy League school. It's like, oh, I'm going to ship my kid off. I'm going to ship my Pete Buttigieg kid off to Columbia, and they're going to come back an anarcho-capitalist. And you said, hell yeah.
Well, no. I think what's actually really important about that is that the distinction, though, is I was still much more right-leaning, and especially probably as a reaction to things and words I didn't understand when I first got to Columbia. My political ideology never shifted or changed or even became serious until I left the military, until I really had a very serious, like hands-on experience with, like I said, the American Empire.
Talk about that. Why?
Okay. So I served, I got out 6 months before we left Afghanistan. If I could tell you like what the feeling in the military, the little milieu in the military at the time, it's like the end of Vietnam. We knew that we hadn't done anything. We knew that we had wasted a bunch of money, or at least that was how soldiers felt. And including the drill sergeants who trained us, like there was just this sense of defeat, the sense of like everyone was demoralized. They were all carrying all this like PTSD and trauma. My own father, stepfather who raised me, died basically a death of despair from lots of service related trauma as well. There's not the resources to help a lot of these vets when they're coming home. So I just, as someone who really did love their country, wanted to serve, and that's why I was there. And then realized, oh, wow, a lot of these people are here because otherwise they would be medically bankrupt and they're trying to keep their child alive. Or, you know, they're just so poverty stricken that the biggest building they were ever in their life is the one where they signed up for the military. And so I felt like suddenly, wow, maybe I'm just a tourist in this operation that really is taking advantage of people who are vulnerable or who don't have any other way to move forward, you know, and make social progress or economic progress. So. Yeah, it just opened my eyes to, I think, the reality of service. I think a lot of Americans fetishize service, as has been said, without really understanding what it is. what it feels like.
Can I just say, there's people I know who have become, sorry, I'm taking one of my anxiety pills. There are people who have become, you know, like full leftist, fuck the system people I know, literally like, because there was someone they wanted to hook up with. I actually know a good handful of fairly radical people who were radicalized by the radical people that they thought were hot at the time. Like actually a kind of freaky amount. And I think that that happened. I think that that's been happening increasingly is, you know, and also just how much they want to fuck us on Piker. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting to hear about someone who goes to this liberal left leaning university that is this boogeyman so many adults think is turning kids into communists. And then now you're saying, well, no. Not to assign some sort of political party to you, but no. It wasn't this university that made me feel these things. It was actually military service. I think that's a very interesting and fresh perspective that is very different than my friends who got radicalized because somebody was sexy.
For one thing, I think that our voting block of young men isn't very politically informed, right? Like, and to what degree they've ever heard these words, Marxism, communism, these like boogeyman words that we're all, that the parents are so afraid that they're going to. The thing is that, well, most of them have never actually interacted with any of those concepts in a serious way. Like, we don't get that in a high school education at all. Maybe you get a little bit of like the Soviets killed lots of people or something, like scare, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay. Yeah, I mean, they did through mismanagement, but as the American Empire killed them.
They also killed a lot of Nazis, which I wasn't taught in school. I had no idea.
Hey, I'm just picking. I just have to pop in with a few anti-communist comments from time to time.
Absolutely. And you're right. Like, obviously, we should be learning from history, but I think that's the point is we should be learning from history. We shouldn't be saying like, oh, you know, communism just doesn't work because it always amounts in the deaths of people when you're like, well, what empire is communist that has ever, is Stalinism an example of communism? You know what I mean? Like, these are important distinctions that I think, like, just basic distinctions that I don't think most young people have the language for. So of course they're going to go to college. They're going to hear about these things the first time, really, in a serious way. And a certain number of them are going to feel, you know, more sympathetic to those positions than they did before they ever had any real interaction with them. But to just close the point up, sorry, Cam, I don't know about you, but like, it did not feel like, at least from the professors, we were being fed some like Marxist propaganda that was like trying to put us down this pipeline. I think most people in elite institutions at that level, they're still right-leaning and they're still totally on board with most American projects. So.
Yeah, I think there's a degree to which this stuff sort of gets lost in translation because so many people, their idea of what communism and Marxism is, if you boil it down to it, they'll call any instance of the government trying to improve people's lives, communism. And that comes from the right.
Yeah.
You know,
the post office might as well be communist. Trump, just to a lot of people, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. Trump stands, we'll see a black person get cast as a Disney princess and that becomes communism. And a little bit more seriously than that type of crazy stuff, whenever government programs are, whenever people advocate for government programs to expand in the direction of improving citizens' lives by, of course, being this big government and by expanding these services, the word communism immediately comes out. And then suddenly certain people think of communism as the Marxist pamphlet that they got from some barista in Bushwick. And some people think of communism as, you know, a healthcare system that is not bankrupting people and making them go to the armed forces to lose pointless wars and put their lives on the line. And I think that, you know, thinking about the fact that we're talking to an audience here, I'm not nearly educated enough on really any political system other than, you know, blue no matter who, which I'm rocking to this day, baby. So I can't dive into the real weeds here.
I have a follow-up, though, for Dylan. As much as I love hearing Cam's, like, you know, sort of pop history analysis of the difference between Maoism and Marxism and communism, the thing that really piqued my interest from you was, like, your experience with the other guys and, like, how rough their circumstances were. And I'm curious, like, as conversations emerge with them, like that hit politics either like tangentially or right on, like how, like what you know, other folks that were serving with you, like how they were processing stuff? Because it definitely seems like there's kind of radicalization going both directions.
It's so complicated. So like, for one thing, I think you should know, the majority of the military is like apolitical. They genuinely don't give a rat's ass like who is sending them where to die.
By the military, you mean the higher ups or like the other guys you were serving with?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I was a boot. So yeah. Like, and on purpose, like I wanted to serve with boots and infantry. So like, yeah, these were like the, you know, just the grunts that get thrown into the meat grinder. And like on some level, they don't care. They think all these politicians are snakes. They kind of like are over that. They're like, we're the, you know, we're supposed to be the apolitical military, right? So like we're supposed to like embody that role. I think a lot of them are right leaning, but I think that's just because that's the American like standard. That's how we grow up. We grow up on like guns and nationalism and everything else. So why is that surprising? I think most of them though aren't serving for any sort of like what could even be considered tangentially a political reason. They're mostly serving for personal reasons that are kind of sad, to be honest.
Just like you mean the economic circumstances?
Economic circumstances, confusion. They don't know where to go. Some of them, I mean, say things like, "Like I just want to kill someone," and like the military is going to let me do it. They're going to let me kill bad guys because they've grown up on this diet of like what it is to be a man. And this will get again back to our point here. I think better, like what is it to be a man in today's generation? And I think when you're raised on like a bunch of violent media and Call of Duty and everything else and nationalism, like it's part of it is serving and specifically killing and yeah.
So like, I do wonder like, why don't you think there are more, and obviously we're like kind of painting with a broad brush, but like, why don't you think like more reacted like you did, which is like, this is fucked. Like we're putting people in this dangerous situation for a pointless war because they didn't have the finances or the opportunities. Like I should turn to some kind of economic or political system that like offers those opportunities. It feels like more of them are turning to saying, no, I want Daddy Trump so I can get mad at the people that created the fucked situation.
Yeah. I mean, people are angry. I would say this is where my privilege comes in. Like I was able to leave the army because I already had a platform. I already had made money outside the military. Like in the case of my friend who's there for his daughter's, you know, surgeries and medical bills, at what point is he leaving? He's not. At what point is my friend who, you know, comes from Tennessee and doesn't have indoor plumbing leaving? He's not. Not unless he, you know, 8 years in, he has a degree from the military or something like that. But like education in the military is not pushed to the degree it should. Is, you know, so there's just fundamental systemic issues throughout the whole thing. I think the question is like, where else are they supposed to go? Right? Like, who is even the Democratic Party offering such a different and better life? These are both corporatist factions. And I think like Americans are starting to wake up to some kind of class consciousness. Like, look at this fucking Luigi fiasco, man. Like how many, I'm a radical,
Luigi?
I'm a radical, but I also like have love tatted on my hand and I'm like, okay, you know, struggling with pacifism.
Can we see the love tat again?
Struggling with pacifism all the time. So like my initial take is like, of course murder is wrong and he didn't even change the system in any meaningful way. Probably the most meaningful thing he did was like draw attention to this fucked up mafia like system. But bro should be in jail, bro. I mean, look, he was angry. I feel bad for the kid. He's angry. I guess he probably lost his sexual opportunities through some thing.
No, and he did not. Have you seen him?
Come on. Are you a Louis? He's a big Louis.
No.
Is that okay? Maybe that's pop buzz news that I got. I don't know. I heard he had a back injury.
His back was hurt. He couldn't fuck.
Listen. And you know what, Cam? Look, people messaged me all day when this was going on originally. They're like, this is you, dude. It's your doppelganger. They're like, he's a wrestler from the Ivy League, bisexual king, like blah, blah. And I'm like, guys, I don't know what you think my politics are, but they're of liberation, not assassination. And I guess what I would say is like, I think he was an angry young man who was rightfully angry about something he had every right to be angry about. But instead of jumping through all the fucking hoops that the system puts in front of him to try and change something from the inside, he was like, dude, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. He didn't see a path forward. You know, like, why should this guy have to go to law school for, you know, 8 years or whatever? And I guess he already had a degree, whatever. So another 4 years of law school so that he can change his system incrementally from the inside. Like, nothing was going to get done. And he knew that. He was in a state of despair. And I think a lot of Americans are in a state of despair. So that's why so many Americans are pro Luigi. They're like, I feel this guy. Like, I know exactly what he's going
through. I can't say I'm pro Luigi for a variety of reasons, but I will say a lot of people are always quick to blame individuals without going on to say, okay, well, what's wrong with everything right now that is enabling these individuals? Why do these individuals exist? It was the same thing that happened after the mass shooting at my high school. Everybody was talking about the evil of the mass shooter, and it was terrible. This was, I mean, not my kind of guy, like not even a little bit. Villain, evil, everything wrong with the world and society. But so few people went on to say, okay, well, what is wrong with the school system? What is wrong with the systems by which we help young foster children? What were the things that caused this? Everybody wants to talk about the individual that committed the heinous act, and nobody wants to say, okay, well, why does this happen? Because those are complicated questions, and they're questions that challenge systems in place that not everybody really wants to interrogate.
Let me just give the other side of that, though. Luigi's a rich kid. Mm-hmm. He's like, life was pretty good. It's like, went to Hawaii, was surfing. And I guess he had some health problems. I guess he had some back problems. But like, I don't know. In the grand scope of history, like, he had like a pretty good life, you know? Went to a private school, had family money. And so, I don't know. It feels like there's something else happening, right? Like you telling me about the guys you served with, they're like, need food for their kids or didn't have other opportunities. Like, those guys getting radicalized or turning to Trump or whatever, I can process. Like, the radical rich kid is a little tougher for me. So what am I missing?
Okay. Look, I would say, like, he was radicalized over a specific issue, right? And that was the issue that he went after. And, like, it's kind of – your response kind of is giving – to a much lesser degree, but, you know, like, billionaire who sits there and is like, look, man, what's the difference between billionaire and poor person today? Like, you sit in the same room and you watch a TV. Like, come on now.
Yes, absolutely. What's with that voice? Do I have a 1920s? I sound like a 1920s silent movie guy.
Exactly, because they're all Gilded Age robber barons. That's how they talk. They're like, come on, see? Hey, you don't deserve
see,
anybody.
Luigi.
If you deserved money, you'd have it. But yeah, no, like, these people who talk like that, I think that's like kind of where it sounds like you're coming from. Like, oh, Luigi had this charmed life until the system failed him dramatically in a very specific way. And that's true. And he did. But once it failed and that radicalized him, I think that's the point, is like, people get radicalized by one really important thing, and then they start like questioning this entire system. They start looking at it and being really disillusioned and feeling like there's no quick, easy way to change it, if you can change it at all. Does that make sense?
I'm skeptical, but it makes a little more sense. All right, Cam, what else you want to get into with your man?
Well, just to give my final thoughts on the Luigi situation, it behooves me to point out that I don't think there would have been the same cultural support and sympathy for him if he weren't hot. And I'm not joking. If he was some incel freak type shooter, I think people would have had very different opinions. And I don't think I'm qualified to make any deep cultural analyses of what exactly that means. But with Luigi,
there's
I think
memes about the Trump shooter.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very, there's certain shooters where I'm like, right, you'd think we would know more about the shooter than we did. Like, the I'm not going deep into this because it's not something we should be talking about right now, but I'm always curious why we never heard anything about the Vegas shooter who was able to kill like dozens of people from an extremely high vantage point with a military grade weapon from an angle and place where it's not easy to kill a lot of people. Point is, he also wasn't hot. And to the hotness factor of it all, I want to talk about something that is very Gen Z. Because while we have Dylan, I want to talk about the things that Dylan has more experience with than very many people. So I sent Dylan and I an article about looks maxing, which is this new trend with Gen Z and Gen Alpha young people, where they are going to extreme and occasionally dangerous lengths to create a physical image for themselves that's reflective of certain beauty standards. So there are young men chewing gum that is being sold to give them a better jawline, which is obviously insane snake oil, but it's getting marketed.
It is? Are you sure?
I guess I haven't tried it, but I don't know.
Okay.
It's getting marketed to them. It's getting marketed to them by influencers across social media. Everybody likes to talk about how this only happens on TikTok. It happens on every platform. TikTok is one of the most rotten and terrible ones, but it happens cross-platform. And young men are getting radicalized in ways that aren't what every person thinks. Young men are not always radicalized by seeing Trump talk about how they're eating the cats and they're eating the dogs and by wanting lower taxes. That can happen. That affects the way certain people vote. But a lot of young men get radicalized by Trojan horse right-wing values that are not blatantly saying, hey, we are following Project 2025. Hey, we are part of the, what's that group of Republican judges?
Federalist Society.
It's not exactly groups that are saying, hey, we're part of the Federalist Society. Come be the next John McCain. It's people targeting young men who feel left out and unwelcome in a culture that is advocating for more diversity and equity. Young men right now, specifically young white men, but young men across the board, feel as though there is no room for us in a culture that's making room for other people. And there are influencers online who are preying on this insecurity through many different means, one of them being the idea of looks maxing and really these same core values that are part of inceldom. People have heard of inceldom. They've heard about the incels, what's going on with these young men, and how very often they're lost, dejected, and preyed upon by manipulative voices. And looks maxing, the idea that you need to look like a Sigma Chad, which a lot of people use the word Sigma. It's very popular in right-wing circles. They think there's this...
Higher than Alpha.
There's this... Higher than Alpha. Absolutely. They think there's this physical standard you need to reach in order to obtain.
So you're saying this is like a respect thing. It's like a Rodney Dangerfield. Like, to get respect, I gotta like look hot.
It all connects really to like red pill theory. You're familiar with red pill?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah. So it's very much like that, right? Like they think that their looks are the most important thing that are gonna get them wherever they want to go in life, are gonna get them the girl they want, are gonna get them, you know, the job they want. And so they like are grasping at straws any way to like look. Again, I'm the anti-influencer, so like I don't have as much direct contact with this stuff because I don't use TikTok.
You're not looks maxing?
I'm not looks maxing. I think also it just goes back to, I think Cam has a really good point about these Trojan horses, and it all goes back to disaffected young men specifically. I think white men, especially why they've been pushed out of the party, he's absolutely right. They're seeing all these initiatives to help people. They don't feel like they're part of that class. They feel like they're the people that are getting taken from or being chastised or having conversations like this. Like, what the hell is wrong with young men? To be honest, like my gut reaction to that was like, really? We're blaming the young men? What's going on with young men is they're all fatherless. So they need Jordan Peterson to fucking tell them to make their bet. Like, what's going on with young men is they don't even know what masculinity is supposed to look like anymore because we've been told – no, it's like maybe it's okay to wear a dress and like you should be in touch with your feelings, but then they cry in front of their girlfriend and they get dumped. And so then fucking Andrew Tate is out here being like, no, guys, do some chest press. That's how you get the and like, yeah, these are easy, compelling narratives to young men who literally just don't have any guidance.
And I've seen young men fall prey to these things, you know, the types of people that you followed on Instagram because you were in the same middle school and high school classes. And then over the years, you don't really talk. And then suddenly you see them posting this insane shit and you're like, what could have happened to you? It's this pro-male culture. And there's so many different failures that have contributed to this. But it's this idea that to be pro-male and to be pro-masculine, you must be anti-woman. And that is something that makes a lot of sense to these young men. Now, mind you, I think there's a degree to which there are people who share a lot of my values that believe that to be pro-woman, you need to be anti-man. But right now, for what we're talking about, especially the trend that we're discussing, a lot of young men think that in order to stand up for ourselves, we need to knock women down a peg. And it's this really dangerous thing. It's the same shit that you get from inceldom. It's the idea that I'm not getting what I want, but suddenly someone like Andrew Tate is telling me, don't worry, it's everybody else who's wrong. It's not you. You need to be more aggressive. You need to be more masculine, and we're associating being masculine with aggression. And again, there are a lot of pro-female women's rights people who characterize masculinity as aggression, understandably so. But then young men say, okay, well then if I'm going to double down on being a man, that means I need to be more aggressive. And what you see in a lot of these pro-man circles is that guys who fuck are now using the same exact playbook as guys who have never fucked in their entire life. Incel playbook is being used by guys who fuck. And it's really, really dangerous. And
that's a problem.
Parents are blaming young people. And this goes to what you were saying, Dylan. Parents are blaming young people for how fucking awful we are. But they conveniently forget that they're the ones who raised us, right? Like, if a mean kid bullies your kid at school, mean kid shoves your kid into a locker, as a parent, you want that kid's parents to take responsibility. But then you see your kid going through these crazy shit brain internet things, and you don't want to take accountability. And the way things are trending, not to throw you under the bus, Tim, what we're seeing at these school board meetings, what we're seeing with teachers, is that millennial parents are trending in a really bad direction.
I'm a great fucking parent.
I'm sure.
I have a different theory. Sex is part of this. I have a different theory.
Part of this, because no one's having it in our generation.
Nobody's
too
having it.
Speak for yourselves.
No, guys, you're right. But
I'm fucking plenty. Okay,
we're all kinds of outliers, Caskey. We can't.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
You're at the top end of the bell curve, Cam.
Yeah, we're two distributions.
Not what we're talking about.
Sorry, you can't be
us. In addition to the sex, I want to throw the jobs at you. I think this is the problem with dudes, is that the jobs are fulfilling. They don't have fulfilling work. And this, I actually think that this is my capitalist version of it. I'm sorry, I know you're an anarcho-communist.
No,
but I think that dudes are like sitting behind a desk, like doing stupid fucking PowerPoints for their beta boss is like very unfulfilling, or not being able to get a good job at all, or like being treated like shit by women because they have a working class job. Like, I think that is behind.
When I asked this to my older brother, these are the two things that he said. He said, one is sex. No one's having sex. And
have more sex.
And that's probably true. Statistically, lots of people are having sex, of course, but statistically, our generation is having less. And they're all watching a bunch of porn. And I think that their brains are messed up and they don't know how to interact with people anymore. I just was reading we're the most isolated generation ever. But also, everyone is becoming more isolated. Like, we're all spending more time at home. We're all getting takeout and not eating the restaurant. Like, we're really just trending in this direction of isolation, but it all goes back to social media, guys. Like, we really sold ourselves to these companies, and young kids are addicted. Like, I talked to the reason I don't use TikTok, I talk to kids who have 6 to 8 hours a day just on that one app. Like, their brain cannot fight it. It's just a slot machine they can't beat.
And let's be clear, by the way, real quick, Gen Z is not the people who fucking designed these apps to be addictive. Gen Z didn't make Facebook. And Gen Z is not the only people who are addicted to these social media platforms. People act like this is this Gen Z phenomenon just because all eyes are on us as we're becoming adults and we fucking suck. But I know millennials, Gen Xers, and boomers who are spending all day on social media too. What Facebook does with boomers is fucking insane. And it's not unlike what TikTok does to radicalize young people. So many older people have been radicalized by Facebook, which we know was designed to make people addicted.
I mean, I don't know. I don't understand how we haven't regulated these platforms yet. Like, we know what they're capable of. They've caused genocides overseas. Like, they're not a joke. They're not to be played around with. They're not like a light technology just for fun. They're really, really influencing how people think. Like, to Cassie's point, I feel so bad for elders and they don't even have a lot of the tools online to sift through misinformation and clickbait and nonsense that younger people, yes, we're all addicted to the stuff, but at least we know how it all works. And we can, not that young people don't fact check anything either. And that's a big problem. Like, part of the way we get information from these systems is just this scroll feed, right? And how many times do we see something that doesn't seem true, but who knows? And then we just scroll without checking it. And then you just have this idea floating around in your brain that's unverified, whether it's, and I just feel like there's a lot of kids and adults running around with that. It's malware in their brains, just all this bad information that they don't know how to sort through. So it's a processing problem, it's a researching problem, and it's also like a deluge of information problem that's keeping us all isolated and alone, and we don't talk to each other. So we're all getting weird and incel-y.
That's uplifting. Yeah. Okay, I've one more. There's one political angle on this. I'm sorry to. I have to obsess over the red versus blue side of this since it's a political channel, and that is that if all the dudes that are looks maxing are red pilled. And only ugly dudes are working for the Democrats. That's not going to be. That's not great. I feel like that's a long-term problem for the Democrats.
It is, and I think Cameron's absolutely right. And that's why, like, people like Hassan Piker and others stepping into space. Like, I hate to say it, but like, It sounds so gross. But like, your straight white men need to like step up right now. And like, just be loud and vocal. Yeah, be hot, but don't like shoot anyone. Just maybe get on and speak your mind about Trump or something.
I'll just say, of the young people, the Democratic Party platforms in one way or another, and you know, I wasn't exactly getting pushed by the Harris campaign. I did a couple live streams with some senators, et cetera, but I wasn't that front facing. But I just did a press conference with Charles Schumer that was just the two of us. And I am a good enough looking guy that I can do some good work for us, but I should not be one of the better looking people the party is putting forward. I should be the median. There should be so many cuter boys than me that the Democrats are platforming to talk to other boys. And the fact that I am on the cuter side of these boys is atrocious. I'm cute enough to be one of the boys. I should not be one of the cutest boys.
Yeah. You're low medium on the masculine side as well. Like low, like you should be on the you should be on the low to medium of the masculine side.
And here
like
I am as like
butch.
One of the frat bros.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah,
Cassie,
that's your image. No. Sorry, I'm just laughing that Cameron, you're so fratty.
my pink shirt.
Leave some babes for the rest of us, bro. I 100% agree, though. No, he's right. We really need to like. Get a messaging. The other thing is, remember that we're trying to appeal to shallow people. Like, these are people whose talking points are things like the right is so much hotter. Like, this matters. These people, they're not voting on serious policy. Like, they're voting on vibes and they think daddy's going to like lower gas prices or whatever. But, you know, we just have to appeal to them at some point, like on their level, I guess.
All right, y'all. That was so great. Dylan, thank you for bringing that bisexual warrior monk perspective to the show. Please, can you stick around? We have one more segment that we're going to do at the end of all these shows. It's called Gen Z News. You know, this thing's going to evolve week to week. We're all going to bring kind of a topic, something in Gen Z News. Maybe it's about politics. Maybe it's about something I know nothing about, influencer beefs or whatever. And every week we'll just go over something buzzing in Gen Z, get everybody's take. I'm going to take the first question this time. Producer Sebastian, we'll be taking the lead on this. He'll be asking the second question, and going forward in future weeks, we'll be having him maybe surprise us with some topics and see what is a buzz with Gen Z. So stick around for that. Gen Z News up next. There's a new poll from Channel 4 in Britain. 52% of Gen Z said they thought the UK would be a better place if a strong leader was in charge who does not have to bother with the parliament. And 33% said that the UK would be better off if the army was in charge. So we have like one third that wants a military dictatorship, and 52% want a, I guess, non-military dictatorship. That's a little concerning for me.
Listen, if we're going to do a military dictatorship, I can only hope it's guys like Dylan.
They better have good-looking uniforms or something. I don't know. Like, yeah, I think that, like I said, people are scared. There's a huge right shift on the whole planet right now, though.
What are they scared of? What are they so scared of that they need a dictatorship?
War is up. I think people do want strong leaders during times of conflict, and it doesn't look like it's slowing down. Even this, you know, temporary, I mean, ceasefires are great. So I'm really happy. I'm going to give Trump credit and say, like, he did one good thing. Then again, it's real common for ceasefires in Israel during inaugurations. But, you know, yeah, I think there's a lot of conflict going on. People are stressed. People are talking about World War III. Which isn't really going to happen, obviously, but people don't know that. They're dumb.
And also, they fucking hate immigrants in the UK. Everybody acts like just because we've got a president who is sending 30,000 immigrants to fucking camps at Guantanamo Bay doesn't mean they don't fucking hate immigrants in Europe. But holy shit, Europeans are so fucking anti-immigration.
I'm so happy.
Especially anti-Muslim, for sure.
I'm so happy I was a 90s baby. I got to tell you, the military dictatorship percentage among my teenage friends, I think, would have been pretty much lower than 33%. But it's strange times. All right, Sebastian, do you have any Gen Z news you want us to respond to?
So this is from Fortune talking about a report by intelligent.com saying bosses are firing Gen Z grads just months after hiring them. Here's what they say needs to change, according to a report by intelligent.com, which surveyed 966 business leaders involved in hiring decisions at their company to explore attitude towards hiring recent Gen Z college graduates. 6 in 10 employers say they have already sacked some of the Gen Z workers they hired fresh out of college in recent months. 75% of companies report that some or all of the recent college graduates they hired this year were unsatisfactory. 6 in 10 companies fired at least one college graduate they hired this year. Only 25% state that all recent college graduate hires worked out well. The most frequently cited reasons for why these hires didn't work out were a lack of motivation or initiative, 50%, poor communication skills, 39%, and a lack of professionalism, 46%.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they don't work. That's why they're getting fired, because they don't like to work. Their brains are broken by TikTok and they like to complain and they like to look
smart.
Actually,
like, I don't think you're wrong, though. I don't think you're wrong. Well, I think that young people, again, they're disaffected, so they don't view all these corporate jobs as, like, there's been a big attitude shift. It used to be such a, like, oh, I have a good job, you know, and that, like, was really fulfilling. To your point, I don't think it fulfills people anymore. Like, they're kind of over this system. They feel like they're being exploited, which they are most of the time. I mean, also, it's interesting, though, like, we had a little conversation about, or you made a mention about capitalism, and I'm an anarcho, I forget what word you said.
Communist,
but
you're an anarcho.
I think, are you familiar with the word techno-feudalism?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so like, I don't
well,
think
well, hypothetically,
I've ever
if he wasn't under- familiar with it, can you explain it to Tim?
Yeah. So I would just say, as a point, while we're talking about economics and stuff, because I'm a systems guy, I don't think I've ever been a producer like under capitalism, except that capitalism subsumes all the things we're about to talk about right now. But I've never had the capitalist framework of like employer, employee, right? Means of production. I have a techno-feudal framework around my work, which is like, I have rents that I pay in order to operate a digital cloud-based fief, if you will, right? Like, I create products that are then held on a platform that people can interact with, but I'm the farmer, right? I'm the one creating the stuff. And then the landowner who owns all the digital land extracts his rents from that. It's a very different system than capitalism. And I think that a lot of people get to interact with that system now, right? It's easier than ever to become an entrepreneur, a business owner, or a drop shipper, or whatever people do on the internet. Sell your
whatever
courses.
Whatever it is you do, I don't really know what you do. That you walk for a while, you're a poet, you're a veteran, you're a spiritual leader.
I got
leader.
My book right here for you, Tim.
Yeah. I'm going to read it.
I'm going to send you this in the mail.
I'm fucking pumped.
I'm going to make you interact with artworks. Yes. No, I think that people actually today have a lot more like freedom to make money in structures that aren't hyper authoritarian capitalist structures, like where I have a boss who tells me like, sit down at this time and don't use your bathroom break. And especially with remote
this isn't
work.
The fucking Jetsons, man. Like,
oh, come
all
on.
We just all we want the kids to do is send the memo when it's time to send right, the well, memo. You know, like it's not. It's not,
I'm
not.
Like I said, I've never had a job, so I'm caricaturizing it. But I've been to school, and I'll tell you that is what school is like in the United States. Right? And so if that's a pipeline system, I just had to get out. But anyways, I think especially with remote work, like people have higher standards for their wages and how they're acquired now. So I think people are just willing to jump around between jobs and find the ones that suit them. And I think this like whole like, oh, Gen Z is so problematic. They're not professional in the workplace. Like, what does that mean? Like, they don't show enough deference to their overlords, or what is that? You know, I'd like to dive into the specifics of those statistics is all I'm saying.
I believe
I
that.
Know, I had an assistant that was like doing her toenail, like painting her toenails in the middle of the day.
Did they come out good though?
I guess, but I was just like, man, I'm waiting. Like I'm waiting for like you to send me the fucking document, you know?
Like, can I give my hot take?
Yeah.
I think that two things famously can be true at once. And I think that Gen Z has had access to information that illuminates just how much employers exploit their workers. And that has de-incentivized people from feeding into certain things. On the other hand, I also think that Gen Z employees are an absolute cancer in the workforce. I don't know if I would ever hire somebody from Gen Z. If I were in a position where I was hiring people, I personally have an assistant who I pay task to task, mostly because he operates assistant at CameronKasky.com and answers emails that I don't want to answer. I call him my thrall, which is probably not professional. But in general, like, you know, Gen Z sucks in the workforce and the workforce sucks for Gen Z. And you can have a lot of relationships that are toxic where both people are the toxic one. And that's not to say Gen Z ought to continue being absolutely the worst, but I'm not surprised that people are firing Gen Zers when most of the Gen Zers I know regularly commit time theft, something that I, by the way, have committed.
We're leaving your email there in the final document so that your poor assistant can get emails from 62-year-old ladies who think you're so cute. That was great. You're awesome. We should do this. We're going to use this. We're going to use some version of it. I don't know. We got to figure it out. We have a few T's to cross and I's to dot, et cetera. Cameron's, you know, team is a very challenging negotiator. You know, we've got lots of legal stuff to worry about. So, you know, we want to make sure Cameron can afford rent. So we got to get that figured out. But we'll keep you posted. I appreciate it. It was super helpful. The drug rug is great, by the way. It's a good vibe.
Take it. Good stuff.
Guys, gals, gender non-conforming pals, that's the fucking show. You're smarter for listening to it. There's more to come. We are going to have some guests who are not only the smartest people in Gen Z, they're also the most exciting. And there's way more coming. We are going to break every barrier. We're going to push the envelope and your life is going to change. So stay tuned. Tune in every week. You can follow Tim Miller on one of his social media platforms. I don't fucking care. And you can follow
subscribe to the feed. Subscribe to the feed. Subscribe to the FY Pod. Comment, like, share, text. Right.
Do it all, man. And just so you know, we're going nowhere. Not until Donald Trump publicly steps down and apologizes for everything he's ever done, and says, "You know what, guys? I take it all back. I'm going to undo it, and I am going to personally name AOC our next president." Until that happens, we're still going to cook, whether you like it or not.